Last month, a high school senior in a suburb of Chicago wrote an essay in his English class. It was a free writing assignment, and his stream of consciousness included scattered references to Rice Krispie Treats, the band Green Day, mass shootings, and necrophilia. A week after the shootings at Virginia Tech, his teacher and the school decided they had to call in the police. The student was arrested and now faces the possibility of serious penalties, essentially for following his assignment to write free, uncensored prose. Los Angeles Times columnist Megan Dom notes in an op-ed that the digital world is filled with what she describes as American psycho prose. It's in your spam filter, crawling across your TV screens, and in flamboyantly vengeful comments on all kinds of blogs. So is punishing this high school senior hypocrisy? Do we need filters before we hit send? And if so, what kind? Our number here in Washington is 800-989-8255. Email talk@npr.org. You can comment on our blog, nicely please, npr.org/blogofthenation. Megan Dom joins us from the studios of member station KPCC, Southern California Public Radio. Her op-ed is called Write Free and Get Locked Up. Nice to have you back on the program.
Hi, Neil. Good to be back.
Run through us what happened to the student. What was his explanation?
Well, it was interesting because his explanation was actually pretty well written. And just to sort of recap what you said, this was an exercise that I'm pretty sure is called automatic writing. And the instructions that the students received sort of ran the lines of write nonstop for a set period of time. Don't make connections as you write. Write whatever comes into your head. You know, don't judge or censor, this kind of thing. So he sort of spewed, you know, did his due diligence and wrote whatever came into his mind. And then circulated an author's note. And he did that after he was arrested. And his explanation said things like that he was making a reference to a Green Day song. For instance, the line "Blood, Sex, and Booze," which was in the first line of the essay, was in fact a reference to a Green Day song. There were also references to video games and the movie Men in Black. He also had some ideas about democracy and the teacher herself. So, you know, it's not really it struck me as something that, if it were to appear on the internet, would be references that would be hyperlinked and then explained if you, you know, clicked on them, for instance. But because he was writing by hand, we don't have that advantage. So we can't really see what he's doing until he explains himself.
And the hyperlink was to the police department.
That's right.
And a week after Virginia Tech, given some of the stuff he wrote, you have to call somebody in.
Well, you know, this case, the student's name has been released. Its name is Alan Lee. You know, the case interested me on a couple of different levels. I mean, first, you have what appears to me like a complete misuse of this automatic writing assignment. I mean, the students received their instructions. But, you know, in my experience, this type of exercise is never designed for anyone to read, certainly not to be handed in. So generally, you know, this is used to kind of get the creative juices going, throw off writer's block to whatever extent you can, and then you throw the piece in the trash. And so to have students doing this and then be held accountable for something that inherently is designed not to be, you know, accountable is, I think, pretty dangerous.
Go ahead.
that was actually one. That was sort of my first thought. I mean, there's a lot that's kind of, this is kind of complicated way of thinking that is required when you get into this territory. But, you know, so that was my first thought, was this is really not the way these sorts of exercises are supposed to be used. But then beyond that, I mean, I think what we have, this is emblematic of a larger phenomenon we have going on in the culture, which is that people, both readers and writers, make less and less of a distinction between carefully thought out, edited material and off-the-cuff spontaneous remarks. And, you know, whatever you think of Alan Lee's work, and, you know, this is not, you know, any sort of stellar, you know, piece of prose that he's delivered.
He's not the next William Blake, speaking of
automatic
writing.
I don't think so. No. You know, but the fact that a writing exercise of this nature was taken seriously on any level, you know, regardless of the context, you know, regardless of the fact that we did just have a shooting, I think it shows, above all else, how much credence we give to material that for any number of reasons can't really hold itself into account for its content, quote unquote.
Yeah. Let's see if we can get some listeners in on this conversation. 800-989-8255. Email is talk@npr.org. Our guest, of course, is Megan Dama of the Los Angeles Times. And we'll begin with Kyle. Kyle with us from Louisville, Kentucky.
Hi, Neil. Hi, Megan. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I was just going to comment. I completely agree with Megan when she says this writing assignment was taken out of context. It wasn't meant to be handed in or for a grade or for anything for that matter, and they shouldn't have considered what this young man said. And I was just going to say the value of a conscious stream of thought when it comes to writing down, you might be really upset about something. You might have just had some big life-altering event happen, and you want to write about it, and that's when you're at your most raw and artistic and creative state. And when it comes to thinking about before writing, I mean, you shouldn't even be thinking when you're writing. You should just be writing. Everything that you're thinking, you know, needs to go right on your paper. You don't need to you need to be completely uninhibited to write. And I think that's the best form of writing.
Well, I have to say, it's the best form of writing to get started. But when it comes to, you know, thinking about your reader, there's a tremendous value in judging and censoring. And judgment and censorship, in some ways, is what writing is all about. When the writer has to make choices, what to include and what not to include. And I think that we may, as a culture, be sort of moving away from that idea in the name of free expression. Mm. And it's hurting our ability to kind of tell the difference between sort of stream of consciousness and material that has been considered.
If I could interject, I agree that, you know, you should have, if you're writing something, you know, something with structure, then that's great. But if you're writing, you know, something and it can evolve one day, you can come back with a clearer mind one day and edit it and put in things that are more insightful and more articulate or just more poignant or something of that nature to re-edit it. But I'm not saying at all times you should have this writing process in mind, but I'm just saying thinking before writing is... you know, it's a good idea, but whenever it comes to writing something that is just like right in your mind, and you know, you shouldn't have to think about, should I write this down? It should just be something you should be able to do. Write it down, do what you want with it, try to publish it, put it in a book like your diary, do whatever you need to do with it. But I think some of the best writing I've ever done personally has come from these moments whenever I've got this raw emotion coursing through my veins, and I just have to get it on paper.
We were thinking about, in fact, starting a website called, I don't know, perrywhite.com or, you know, everybodyneedsaneditor.com, where you could send your stuff in, and it would be edited before it got posted to the blog. You know,
that's a good
useful
one.
Yeah. Thanks for the call, Kyle.
Thank you, Neil.
Let's see if we can get Laura on the line. Laura's with us from New London in Connecticut.
Yes, hi.
Hi.
I'm actually a teacher, so I think my perspective on this might be a little bit different. Students in the classroom and in class settings, in school settings, are held to a different standard, I think, than adults, and for good reason. They're at a very formative stage in their development. And writing and speaking, things that they might say, that, you know, they don't have the same free speech that everyone else does, and that is to ensure a safe environment for students. I think that's an important point that's maybe missing in this dialogue.
Mm-hmm. Megan, what do you think?
Well, I think that's absolutely true. And I, you know, in this discussion, we're extrapolating a bit and you know, going from a very specific situation with, mm-hmm. with this student in Cary, Illinois, to sort of larger issues of kind of logic and rhetoric and the way they manifest in the culture. I mean, I do think, you know, of course, you know, the teacher has a responsibility to assess a piece of writing and, you know, put it in the context of this student and determine if there's a problem. I mean, in the case of this student, you know, he was a wrestling team member with a 4.2 grade average. He was well-liked. He was ambitious. We're not talking about the profile we saw of Sung-Hui Cho at Virginia Tech. I mean, it's really a sort of apples and oranges situation. And I think that to say, well, you know, this Virginia Tech shooter had this kind of prose style that we dug up, and this guy in high school in Illinois has a similar style, and to sort of equate those things is a pretty reductive approach. So I just think we need to kind of, you know, be careful with this rather than jumping to sort of, you know, the most obvious conclusion.
Well, I think the point that I would make regarding that, and I understand what you're saying about this being a different case in terms of the student profile, but teachers are actually responsible to the law as part of our duties in the classroom to actually not make the determination. That's why it is then brought to someone at the administrative level and to psychologists to make a determination that, in fact, this isn't some sort of deeper-seated issue that's going on, and, mm-hmm. and it is, in this case, you know, potentially just a creativity issue. But I think the important piece is to err on the side of caution, because a profile is only a piece of the puzzle, and anyone who's been in the classroom knows that, you know, any kid at any given time can have many things going on under the surface that you might not be fully aware of.
And to be fair to Megan Dom, she did say that a referral to a psychologist might have been appropriate in this case. Mm-hmm. It was just the referral to the police department that may have been a little over the top.
Well, I think that probably has to do with the context of you know, the more detail about what was written.
But the teacher knowing who the kid is and what else he does.
In some cases, though, it's actually out of the teacher's hands in terms of referring it if a threat is made.
All right.
On some level.
All right. Thanks very much for the call.
Thank you.
Appreciate it. And Megan, thank you for your time.
My pleasure. Thanks, Neil.
Megan Dama, a writer for the Los Angeles Times, joined us today from our member station in Pasadena, California, Southern California Public Radio, KPCC. And you're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News.